Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
From Bonn, Germany, with the stories making headlines across the continent, this is DW's Africa Link with me, Crispin Mwakideu. In this edition, Cloud of Terror. This Nigerian survivor recalls moments before Abuja's second blast in less than 3 weeks.
I heard a big bam, a big blast, and all of us just ran out after the break. I was even trying to look for the vehicle that I entered.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says South Sudan's President Salva Kiir is ready to form a transitional government.
I made it clear to him that he needs to do everything in his power to end the violence and also to begin a process of national dialogue about a transition government.
And May 3rd is the World Press Freedom Day. Do Cameroonians enjoy a free, neutral and unbiased press?
We're just deceiving the world into thinking that there is a press freedom in Cameroon. Look at what is happening around.
Stay tuned for that story coming as part of our focus on human rights. I'll be right back.
Top story.
And we begin in Nigeria. Barely 3 weeks after Abuja's bomb blast in mid-March, terror has struck once again. President Goodluck Jonathan summoned security chiefs on Friday to a special meeting after Thursday's explosion in the capital, which killed more than a dozen people. Scores others were injured. The latest attack happened near the same site where another blast by Boko Haram Islamists claimed 75 lives. Nigeria is still searching for almost 200 girls believed to have been kidnapped by Islamists in the northeast. Samuel Okoya with this report on Nigeria's security challenges.
The latest incident occurred at Yanya, near where the April 14 attack occurred. Besides the coincidence in place, the attack was quite similar to the earlier one, as the bombing was carried out to inflict maximum casualty. Since January, Nigeria has experienced an unprecedented level of terrorist attacks. The number of people killed in terrorist-related violence since the beginning of the year is put at more than 1,500. Ifeanyi Okechukwu, National Coordinator of the West African Network for Peace Building, believes vicious attacks are being carried out on the Nigerian people because of the apparent weakness of security agents.
The terrorist group has seen that the demystification and the vulnerabilities of our security forces is now well known. It has given them more courage, to increase the frequency. And they are even taking the attacks to them to tell you that they are making a statement that Nigeria's security does not have the capacity to protect its citizens.
Many, like Sylvester Odiong Ahene of the Lagos State University, believe the attackers' intentions are to inflict maximum destruction.
The capacity to deliver evil, as it were now, can only come from what I would call artificial endorsement. Because the military told us that when they capture some of their bases in Maiduguri, they found drugs, all kinds of things that these people are usually high on to be able to carry out some of these things that they do. Because it is not easy for a human being to start slaughtering fellow human beings like animal, without some endorsement, whether drugs, or any other thing that can, of course, change the attitude as to how you relate to, fellow human beings.
In the face of the deteriorating security situation, the government has come under pressure to act. On Wednesday this week, women activists protested before the parliament in Abuja, calling on the government to do something about the 230 schoolgirls abducted more than 2 weeks ago. Aizad Wanke is one of the women who took part in the protest.
The government should focus on people. People are dying, people are losing their lives, people are scared, and you need to provide succor now. You need to give us hope, some sort of hope, any sort of hope, because fear is a very difficult emotion to control.
Boko Haram is fighting for the imposition of Islamic law in Nigeria. The government says it will contain the activities of the group.
Sam Olukoya in Lagos. Thursday's deadly bombing in Abuja has raised security concerns ahead of the World Economic Forum scheduled to start next week in the capital. Our correspondent Ben Adam Shamang visited the blast site and he's been telling me more about the aftermath.
After this second bomb attack, Nigerians have been kind of discussing silently, some in groups, wondering why it has to happen in quick succession and wondering why it has to be Nyanya. Of course, it's understandable. There's this interface, many places, I mean roads linked to that Abuja. People coming from the west, north, east, south, many of them converge on this spot to either travel out or come into Abuja, apart from intercity travels within Abuja. So people are actually worried within Nyanya. And inside Abuja, however, some people, yes, apart from talking, work is going on. People have resumed work. Businesses are going on. The taxis are moving here and there. But the district head of Karu is actually, I'm talking of Haruna Shoaibu. He's saying that they wonder why this Nyanya has become the target. They said they want to carry out a kind of a protest. They want to see the president over this so that security is actually been tightened. Why Nyanya? And the question is really, why Nyanya?
Ben, we understand that you have been talking to some of the witnesses or even survivors of the blast. What have they been telling you?
Yes, some actually survived, according to them, by the special grace of God. That, I mean, someone said he was just there, about 50 meters away from the scene. Suddenly he had a bang, then a flame of fire, and the car he was in, they just stopped and started running. Some other people were so unfortunate, they were too close and they got injured either by some debris or the fire, just the bang just carried them, hit on the ground and all that stuff. Crispin, you can just listen to what some of them are saying. I mean, their testimonies.
Somebody parked a red car, Gulf product. So the car was parked right before me. Before we know what is happening, the car just exploded and nobody was inside the car. So I dived one corner. And before I could regain my consciousness, so many people were lying down dead.
As I was coming from Lagos, I boarded the taxi. Final destination is that Nyanya. So I was on my way. We are just few meters, about 500 meters to that bomb blast area. That was when the thing happened. Everybody, including the driver and the passenger, four of us inside the vehicle, we just ran out, running for safety. I heard a big bam, a big blast. And all of us just ran out after the break. I was even trying to look for my from the vehicle that I entered, which I later saw. Then tried to pick my bag inside the boot of the vehicle and start running because nobody is even ready to even continue the journey. Everybody was even trying to look for safety there and there.
Nigerian survivors, they are telling their story about the blast. Ben, we understand also that there were other unexploded bombs that were found near the blast site in Nyanya.
Well, the police authorities, in particular the bomb disposal unit or even the anti-suicide anti-terrorist squad, they all are combing the areas, and any bomb that has not exploded, yes, they have taken it, and they are assuring Nigerians that the entire area has been combed. They have done some wreckage job. They have removed whatever is hidden there. So the place is safe. That's what the police are saying.
Some analysts say that these attacks are politically motivated, and others say it is to scare away the delegates of the World Economic Forum, which is just around the corner. What's the word on the street in Nigeria?
Well, the words in the streets of Nigeria is that everybody wants to live and enjoy life. Therefore, they're calling on government to ensure that once we vote you in, you should be able to provide security, provide food, provide school, provide roads, and all that stuff. So Nigerians want government to actually be on top of the situation, and government is also saying that they are really on top of the situation, and that's why they are assuring Nigerians that all will be well.
DW correspondent Ben Shemang shedding light on the Abuja blast in Nyanya.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
Welcome back. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry on Friday met with South Sudan's President Salva Kiir. The U.S. top envoy's visit to Africa has mostly focused on South Sudan. Months of fighting between government forces and rebels have killed thousands and displaced over 1 million people. To get a picture of where things stand, DW's Jan Philip Scholz had an exclusive interview with South Sudan's Foreign Minister Barnaba Marielle Benjamin. Due to technical reasons, we have voiced Yan's questions.
Well, as you know, when the IGAD summit held its meeting last year in Kenya, the IGAD countries had agreed that there would be a protection and deterrent force that will be built by five countries. That was Ethiopia, Kenya, Rwanda, Burundi, and Djibouti, in order to protect the important infrastructure in South Sudan, especially the oil fields, and also to provide monitors for the verification and monitoring mechanism monitors, which we are going to monitor to oversee the cessation of hostilities and how it is to be implemented. That process is already being handled by the IGAD and the East African countries in order to bring about this protection and deterrent force. That was a decision by the heads of state of IGAD and East African countries.
The U.S. Secretary of State also said he fears that South Sudan is on the brink of a genocide. Do you agree with his interpretation?
That is too much an interpretation, one must say. Yes, there is a rebellion that is being contained, and that's why the contribution to be done is towards actually implementing the cessation of hostilities so that we don't go into that process of genocide. I don't think there is any possibility of genocide in South Sudan here because there is no ethnic war which is going on. What is happening is an attempted coup that have resulted into a rebellion, and it's a struggle for power. And so you find all various ethnic groups in this country across the line. So frankly speaking, I think as the peace process, cessation of hostilities has been signed, I think that issue of genocide is still far away. It can be averted. No doubt there has been massacres that have been conducted, especially by the rebels in Bantu. You have seen it. You have seen it in Malakal before. You have seen it equally even in Bor. Yes, there have been a mistake, especially in Bor, which was under the control of the government, where there's some youth public just tried to attack the unarmed civilians. The government has already taken steps in that in trying to hold accountable those who have done that. So the issue of genocide is not the issue. What we should concentrate on now is how to bring the peace as soon as possible.
Can you assure the world that SPLA does not kill any civilians?
No, the SPLA is a national army that is mandated by the constitution of this country to protect the territorial integrity and the sovereignty of this country. And one of the priorities is to protect its civilians. It is these civilians that has given it the mandate to protect this nation. No, the SPLA can never be engaged in the killing of civilians because they have not done it. What has happened are isolated cases like what we saw in Juba, where there was target killing, but it was not a government policy or the policy within the National Army. I'm sure those who engage in that will be held accountable and punished for it.
South Sudanese Foreign Minister Barnaba Marielle Benjamin. You're listening to Africa Link, DW's radio program from Bonn, Germany.
Human rights.
May the 3rd is World Press Freedom Day, a day when people reflect on the importance of the right to information. Cameroonian journalists are already using the opportunity to highlight what they say is a systematic abuse on media rights by President Paul Biya's government. And as Moki Kinzeka reports, media manipulation is rampant in the West Central African nation.
This is Cameroon's state radio signature tune, played before every news bulletin. The tune reminds listeners that Paul Biya is still president and father of the nation. For an outsider, this may sound like government propaganda, but for local journalists, this is satire at its best. The intention is to illustrate that President Biya has been in power for far too long. Journalists want to show that in his 32 years at the helm, Biya has been gagging the news media. Before he came to power in 1982, Cameroon had only one radio station and 15 newspapers. Today, there are over 500 newspapers, radio and television stations in the country. But President of Cameroon's Union of Journalists, Chalin Dichia, told me President Biya controls many of these media houses.
We're just deceiving the world into thinking that there is a press freedom in Cameroon. Look at what is happening around. Just anybody. I'm a journalist. The journalism profession in this country brought home ant-infested fagots, and by way of the regime of the government.
Journalist Kinin Sum of the Post newspaper believes the high number of newspapers does not translate into better quality journalism. He said the government created these newspapers but failed to train the journalists.
The quantitative leap of the number of news organs that we have not been matched by quality. Because when we talk about the press, we should also talk about ethics. If we pretend that we are free with the violation of ethics that we are seeing, one day get up and discover that the journalism that we're claiming to be protecting is no longer there. How free is the journalist who is manipulated by the politician?
John Baakuru, publisher of a leading newspaper, Times Journal, said journalists in the media houses created by the regime are quite often told what to say.
There are a lot of media houses where sometimes articles are dictated by news sources. They just call you, they dictate an article, and, you know, those articles are carried and published, and you stand up and you call yourself a journalist. When you, a journalist, a publisher, find yourself being dictated a story by a news source, you should be ashamed to call yourself a journalist.
The government created a communication council to address issues concerning the press. But state radio journalist Ngala Kilian Chimtom said the government manipulates that council.
When the president of the republic takes up his pen and then he appoints a number of people to regulate the press, these people will be at the beck and call of the executive because the president is the chief of the executive.
The international media watchdog Freedom House has reported that press freedom in Cameroon is restrained through tough laws and extra legal detention. Judges have even compelled journalists to reveal their sources.
Moki Kinzeka in Yaounde. Now you've talked about rights, let's now talk about wrongs. Liberia is rebuilding itself after a bloody civil war. It is often said that a well-functioning justice system is key to long-term peace and security. This may mean giving criminal convicts a second chance. Julius Kanuba with this report on probation in Liberia.
Every one of us needs a chance in life. So it's another chance given to these probationers. Some people will commit crime based on the circumstances, but do everyone need to be in jail? For us, we say no.
That's Hilary Siakosilif, Liberia's Assistant Minister for Corrections and Rehabilitation at the Ministry of Justice. Selif believes the probation program for people convicted of minor crimes, such as theft of property, aggravated assault, and burglary, is an important step towards reforming Liberia's justice sector. Under Liberia's criminal justice system, there exists a law for probation, which was enacted some 50 years ago. But until 2010, the law was never applied. This has now changed, partly thanks to GRZ, the German Society for International Cooperation, an NGO which implemented the project promoting the rule of law and justice in West Africa. The project was commissioned by the German Foreign Ministry. In Liberia, the project centered on the concept of probation. Ali Sila, executive director of the Center for Counseling and Restorative Dialogue, was the probation coordinator.
It is a second chance opportunity for people who are convicted of crime, and also to help in terms of our reconciliation, because we did a lot of work in terms of mediating between the victim and the offender in the community, where we ordered a pre-sentence investigation report, which is the PSIR.
The pre-sentence investigation report provides information on convicts' suitability for probation. Reducing the number of detainees, Ali says, is critical as Liberian prison facilities are notoriously overcrowded.
So it really helped, to be frank with you, by bringing down the number of pretrial detainees within our prison. So probation, to be frank with you, is groundbreaking in Liberia. It's very new, but I think it helped in terms of revamping the justice system in Liberia.
I visited Kakata City, the capital of the local province of Mangibi, and met two probationers, Bwema Kolba and Sosa Koli. They told me how they felt about their conditional release from detention.
I feel happy.
second chance, an opportunity to be able to unite with my family. I'm a father of 3 living children.
I'm the breadwinner of my family. You get me? And with my absence, I know they were catching a hard time.
Being released from prison on probation does not amount to complete freedom, but can be a catalyst for change, says Ali Sila.
Well, the first condition is that you must stay out of crime. You shouldn't commit crime. You should stay home at a certain time. You should perform community service. You should pay restitutions. You also, at the end of your probation, you should write a letter asking for apologies to the victim.
That report was compiled by Julius Kanuba.
USA.
Let's hear now what you have to say about the stories we've been covering on this program. Abubakar Jallo joined me in the studio shortly before we came on air. Abu, what do we have this week?
Hi, Christine. Our article on Kenya's new polygamy law sparked another big row on our Facebook page.
Yes, the Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has signed into law a bill making it legal for men to marry as many women as they wish. Under the new law, men do not need consent from their current wives if they wish to marry again.
Now, Crispin, you are from Kenya. What's your take on this?
What's my take on that? I think you're jealous of me by now, Abu. Let's be
I
honest.
I don't think so.
Let's be honest.
No,
come on.
I do have my own personal reservation.
Anyway. Okay. Actually, the law actually states that men can only marry as many wives as they wish, rather under the context of a traditional wedding. And also the law has outlawed paying bride price or dowry for men to marry women.
That those point did not really come out in all the major articles that showed up in the international media. They only just focused on this prohibition.
Precisely. That was the thing. A lot of reaction came just from the fact that, you know, a polygamy law has been signed. And especially from the women, which understandably from the women, this was outrageous. But people have not yet taken time to really understand the details behind the law. Of course, if you're a woman, most of them would not agree with it. But for Kenyan men, they think it's the right step forward.
Now let's hear what others have been saying about this. Gladia McNamara put it, disgusting. And Ken Kwabina said, I wonder how the men would feel if women were allowed to marry as many men of their choice. It's rather unfortunate. This law is biased and aimed at nothing but to reduce women to nothing. Jaden Mashando wrote, this is culture. Just as you have embraced gay and lesbians, we have also embraced culture. Thus, we need to respect each other based on that. Africans have never condemned Europe for whatever they do. We all have bigger problems to deal with. Susan Gichuhi wrote, this is the worst news for me this year. I can't believe we have such selfish and backward-thinking leaders. For once, I hate to say that I'm Kenyan. I see you're laughing.
Well, I mean, it's her opinion, right?
Okay, let's go. Charles Mugu said, I am Kenyan, and I'm not going to do this just because it's legal. I support it, though. Legal wives are better than mistresses. Maria Salkina said, being faithful is the best. But if you legalize this madness for men, be so kind to legalize it for women as well. For so many women would like to have a larger choice as well. Jaden Machando replied, this is our culture, which has been running for decades, and no one is forced to be a part of it. That's all from me. If it's Friday, it's your say. Over to you, Crispin.
Thank you very much, Abu. You can react to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending us a text message on +491609575910. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW53110, Bonn, Germany. Your say will be back at the same time next week.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja. Africa Link correspondents reporting for you from wherever the story breaks.
And before we go, let's take another look at our main stories. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan has met security chiefs following a second deadly blast in Abuja. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has agreed to form a transitional government after meeting US top envoy John Kerry. Cameroonian journalists have blamed government for gagging the media as the world marks Press Freedom Day on May the 3rd. And we've come to the end of the show. Isaac Mugabe is taking over the microphone next week. And of course, you can always get more news on Africa by visiting our website, dw.de/Africa. From me, Christopher Makideo, and the rest of the Africa Link crew, have a pleasant weekend.